Dive into the dynamic world of high school sports. Whether you're a seasoned athletic director, a newcomer to the field, or simply curious to learn more about this exciting profession, this podcast is your go-to resource for inspiration, education, and a deeper understanding of the game-changing decisions that shape the world of high school athletics.
Welcome back to AD360. I'm Greg Vandermeid, and today we have another great episode for our listeners. We're recognizing the unsung heroes of athletic departments, and that's the athletic trainers. March is Athletic Trainer Appreciation Month, so we wanted to show our appreciation by having a current ATC on with us. We're joined today by my friend, former colleague, and athletic trainer extraordinaire, Christine Dalle from Fountain Valley High School in California. Christine, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Greg. Thanks for having me.
We really appreciate you having on, you know, and we're excited to kind of dive in and start talking about the nuances for athletic training, the importance that it has for every athletic department. But before we start diving in and start firing questions at you, I definitely want to also recognize and mention our co-host, Scott Rosenberg, who's always joining us. Scott, do you have any injuries that you need to report over to Christine, or are you healthy right now?
Christine, I got a bad case of the OLD. If you've got any cure for the OLD, you let me know. It's
we can talk about that.
It's been happening gradually over the years, for sure.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, Christine, we're going to start throwing some questions at you here in just a minute. But again, really excited to have an athletic trainer on here. For those athletic departments that are thinking about adding ATCs, Christine's certainly going to share a wealth of knowledge for us. But before we start kind of diving in and getting into the nuts and bolts of the day-to-day life and the importance of athletic training, Christine, why don't we start off with, you know, what led you to the field? How did you get into it?
Well, my mom was an OR nurse for like 30-something years. And so I've always been drawn to medicine. I always liked looking at her, like, journals that would come in the mail and looking at the pictures, and always wanted to go see a surgery, but she didn't work at a teaching hospital, so that was never a possibility. But just always loved looking at that stuff. And then I've played sports my whole life. So in high school, I did soccer, volleyball, and track, and then played soccer in college. So I was in the training room myself as an athlete, so I kind of got the taste of it there. And then it was kind of like I blended the best of both worlds. I got emergency medicine and I get to watch sports. So it worked out perfectly.
That's fantastic. And I think that shares, you know, definitely a different field than most athletic directors who are tuning in and listening to this, but there's some similarities there, right? Mm-hmm. Many folks got into the world of being an athletic director because they are former athletes. They enjoyed athletics and they wanted to find a way to blend not only being involved in sports, but their skill sets and their interests and being able to assist student athletes. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, people are like, oh, like, you work weird hours. I'm like, I get paid to watch sports, you know. Some of the sports I don't care for, but, you know, it's like you get the best seat in the house, and I get to watch sports and help people when they get injured. It's great.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. I love that. And I think Greg's right. Like, that gateway into athletic director world, athletic trainer world, that commonality is most of the time being an athlete yourself, being around it, being cared for by an athletic trainer at some point in your life, and hopefully having a good experience that you wanted to emulate somebody and go into that field as well. So perfect. Talk to us about the role of an athletic trainer and being a good one. So, like, what does your day-to-day look like, and what makes somebody, from your perspective, a good athletic trainer?
Like, day to day, what I like about it is it's always different. There's different games, different schedules, different weather that you have to deal with, which doesn't get stagnant, which is what I also love. You know, I'm not always stuck in an office, a lot of it's, you know, obviously checking emails, doing, you know, the office side of it. But then, you know, checking schedules, making sure everything's still on the schedule or not. You know, getting my gear prepped, getting the kids prepped, dealing with any, like, last minute issues that may come up, you know, kids that come in, you know, right before the game and they're like, hey, I got this issue that I want you to fix. And so it's, you know, the spontaneity of it. But being a good athletic trainer, I mean, you have to be able to deal with that spontaneity, being very flexible. If you're a like rigid type of person that's very structured, you're that's not going to work because every day something comes up, you know, whether you walk outside and you're like, oh, there's a baseball game going on that no one told me about. So you have to be able to be flexible, be able to work with, you know, I'm in the high school setting, being able to work with teenagers, which is a feat in itself.
I'm learning as a parent these days.
Yes, and that's just a micro dose. So,
right. Yeah. In fact, I think like it's not only work. You're working with so many different types of people, right? So you got the kids, you got the parents, you got the coaches, you've got the athletic directors, and I would imagine there's a lot of push and pull from both ends. Whether it's get them back on the field, you be the bad guy, so as a parent, I don't have to be the bad guy shutting my kid down. Like, there's got to be a lot of that pressure and push and pull.
There can be. I've lucked out at Fountain Valley. Like, coaches have been really supportive. A lot of them are just like, yeah, whatever you say. If you tell me he's out, he's out, you know, which is great. It takes the pressure off me. I don't particularly like holding kids out. You know, I'm, like I said, I'm an athlete myself, and I don't want to be off the field or off the court, you know? So, parents, because you're dealing with minors, you kind of have to respect like what they're going to do. You know, if I say, you know, like, I don't think he needs to go to the doctor, and they take him, and it's like, okay, well, now we're under doctor's orders. So that can be a little frustrating. But again, it's the parents' decision. We also have a lot of different ethnicities at our school, a lot of different cultures and religions. So you have to respect that as well. You know, for example, like we're going through Ramadan right now. So we have a bunch of kids, you know, that are running track, but they haven't eaten all day, you know? So, learning that stuff, and respecting it, goes a long way as well.
That's an educating too, right? Like, in that kind of case, hydration as much as you can, whenever you can, whenever, you know, the religious requirements allow it, and try and help them get through. So they're just safe having, out there.
You know, like an open line of communication. I just had a kid come in the other day that was dealing with calf cramps, and I'm like, okay, what can you eat? What can you drink? You know, he was only having like a little bit of water at night. I'm like, let's throw in some Gatorade, you know, just to get electrolytes, you know, but being able to have that open conversation builds respect between both myself and the athlete. So then they can feel comfortable, like, basically talking about anything, you know, but just so we're both on the same page, have a good understanding.
Really, like we said about flexibility, I've seen that over the years, how flexible athletic trainers need to be. Mm-hmm. And even if it's not something related to the school, you wind up having other mandates passed down to like wet bulb. Mm-hmm. Right? Is that an NFHS one that I remember came through? Yeah. Obviously, like concussion testing. Over the years, I'm sure you've seen a lot of changes in mandates where you've had to have some flexibility and be able to roll the punches.
Oh, yeah. We a group of us, you know, in the district, we all joke that we're now like meteorologists, you know, because we're out there watching the weather, and we're located right next to the coast pretty much, so we don't have to deal with it a lot. But it's, you know, it's another thing on our plate. Like, okay, you're checking the weather, we're having a heat wave, let's put the thing outside and check it every 30 minutes along with all the other stuff you're doing, you know. And it's usually during football season, so you've got a lot more prep work going on. So honestly, sometimes I forget it's out there. I was like, oh crap, I need to go check it. So, yeah, it's just like, okay, what are we doing now? What's next?
So, Christine, what I'm hearing from that, and this is for the California folks that are tuning in, apparently Johnny Mountain and Dallas Rains need to watch their backs for the athletic trainers in Southern California because they know the weather better than they do.
It's definitely real time. That's for sure.
You know, I'm going to kind of piggyback off of what Scott said too, just the spontaneity of it, right? And again, mm-hmm. that's another similarity that athletic directors and athletic trainers have in common. Things are, mm-hmm. it's on the fly. You know, so many things are happening. So many things are changing as events are taking place, as the practices are taking place. The level of organization that you have to put towards your given week and day mm-hmm. has really got to be something that's borderline extraordinary, because you're having to be in multiple places at once when you physically can't be. And that level of planning really takes a certain skill set. That is for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think on Thursday, I have 5 events going on at the same time. So just, you know, pre-planning, you know, I look at my schedule every day, and just kind of mentally prepare on what I might be dealing with. You know, do I need to get in a little bit earlier? What prep work do I need to do? Luckily during spring, it's a lot less, but still, you know, you've got a couple hundred kids on the pool deck, and then you've got another couple hundred at a track meet. Then you got a baseball game going on. You know, it's like, what is your priority? As far as like injury rate, you also think of location. Our campus is quite large. So, you know, do I be centrally located for everybody? And then, you know, once I figure that out, you know, I communicate with coaches, just be like, hey, I'm going to be over at baseball, or I'm going to be over at the track, you know, call me if you need me. And they're really good about that. So they appreciate knowing where I'll be. So they can either send a kid over or, you know, or whatnot. So just having that pre-planning, and then it takes the stress off me, you know, if something pops up, you're like, okay, like I got this, I've already arranged my other events, so I can handle, you know, whatever comes up. So, and administration's really good. You know, they all have my phone number, so, and they're at different fields or events, and so they can call me as well.
I think that's a great segue into a question that both Scott and I had, is mm-hmm. how important is the relationship for the athletic trainer, the athletic director, as well as the coaches? You know, I would assume that you have to have pretty strong relationships there, open lines of communication, but talk us through from your perspective, you know, how important are those relationships?
Extremely important. You know, it goes, you know, so we're on the same page, you know, as far as, you know, they have an athlete get injured. We can talk about it. We can talk about what the strategy is going to be to get the kid back. You know, does the kid need to go see a doctor? You know, what's the timeline looking like? Because coaches, as you know, they have their own planning to do. You know, is this kid going to be available for games this week? Is he going to be out, you know, 2 weeks? You know, especially, you know, say you're dealing with a pitcher in baseball. You know, they have a cycle that, you know, the coaches are going through. So just being open and honest with them, you know, it helps both parties out. And then, you know, then we can both check in with each other and be like, okay, where are we at? What are we looking at? You know, and again, so then they can plan. As far as like with the athletic director, I think the biggest thing is communication with schedule changes, which a lot of us, it would probably be the biggest like complaint from athletic trainers is, you know, lack of communication. You know, whether it's practice changes, game changes, you know, it gets frustrating, when we're the last to know, to be honest. Cause it, like you said before, we have so many events going on. It's like, well, it would have been nice to know that there's a game going on today, you know? So,
and that never happens. What are you talking about?
Never. Like I said, I literally walked out one day and I'm like, why are their kids warming up on the baseball field, you know? And they're like, oh, the Tuesday game got switched to Monday. Like, oh, let me go get my stuff ready. So, yeah, that communication piece is huge, you know? So, for all the ADs out there, like, let's work on that.
And I would imagine that's huge, right? You know, because it happens frequently, you know, mm-hmm. I've been guilty of it. I know you and I've worked together. I know I've been guilty of it, right?
Yeah.
And I think the thing that athletic directors take for granted is how available athletic trainers are. You have a life outside of of those training room walls and those fields and courts and pool decks. Yeah, exactly. You try to. And like one of the things Scott and I have always talked about on these episodes is, you know, there's got to be a balance, you know, otherwise you're going to burn out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a big takeaway is the level of importance for that communication piece from the AD perspective to all avenues and channels that are going to be participating and assisting in any type of activities taking place. The ATC should really be at the top of the list because unfortunately we live in a litigious society and you want to make sure that you're protecting your kids number one, but then also protecting your department number two. And if you're not going to be defendable by having the proper personnel there, you're really leaving yourself open. So I think that communication piece really resonates well with me. Scott, what are your thoughts?
I mean, first of all, there's some great software out there for communication tools that ADs, if they're not on them already, should really think about. And athletic trainers should be like on that automated contact list. If a game changes, it should just be an automatic that an ATC is emailed and or text message, right? Like something has been added, something has been changed, so that it's like clockwork and an athletic director doesn't have to think about it. And then to Greg's point, we always talk about like keeping the athletic trainer in mind as you're building a schedule. If you've got preseason and you've got the trainer coming in for the first practice at 7 a.m., and then you're going to start scheduling scrimmages at 4 p.m. and 5 p.m. and 6 p.m., like what is your thought process for when you want that trainer there? You're not going to, or you shouldn't expect, it, from my perspective, the trainer there from 6 a.m., 6:30 a.m. getting set up for that 7 a.m. practice till 9 o'clock at night. I just don't think that's reasonable. And I know there are lots of ADs who are cognizant of that. And then there's others that just don't really think much about it. But I think that's really important. And then I guess I would say like expectation setting. Again, what is that communication like? Who's contacting parents if there's an injury? Are we relying on the trainer, the coach? Is an athletic trainer expected to do therapy versus deal with injuries? And when do you give an athletic trainer time, right, to think about being able to work on the therapeutic side versus just managing injury side? So I think, as you guys said, just making sure that you're on the same page and that communication is always the most important thing from an athletic director role, for sure.
Yeah, I always say, you know, they're able to tell a bunch of other people that the game has been changed. Just stick me on any email. Let me decide which pertains to me or not. Just stick my name in there. I don't care. You know, that's an email. I can just click delete it. It's fine. At least the information's out there. You know, if it's an away game that got changed, okay, great. That doesn't pertain to me, but at least I'm in the group, you know? So, just that communication piece is huge.
I need a human perspective on this question because I'm a big like AI proponent. And mm-hmm. So I could just type in, create athletic trainer questions for an athletic, sorry, create questions, interview questions for mm-hmm. an athletic trainer interview, pump out a whole bunch of questions. But from your perspective, give some advice to athletic directors. What are some of the questions that you would have them ask as they were looking to hire somebody?
I'm really big on experience. So, understanding where the candidate's coming from, what experience they have. There's so many different settings that athletic trainers are in now. I know a girl, she worked with Cirque du Soleil in Vegas, and then now she's working with the Marines down in Camp Pendleton, California. There's industrial settings. You've got obviously the high school, college settings. So just learning about the candidate's experience and what they've had to deal with, you know, situations that they may have been involved in, the understanding if they've had like any work conflict that they've had to work through, whether it be, you know, like having to deal with a coach that doesn't want to work with you or an AD that doesn't want to work with you. You know, how did they overcome that? Things like that. Because I mean, you could have your standard, you know, interview questions, and honestly, you can BS your way through those. You know, sometimes they're very scripted. And then for like the high school setting, I'd really ask like why they want to be in that setting. Because, you know, it's high school kids. You've got multiple events going on at one time. Can you handle that? I guess there was a trainer at Fountain Valley before me, that didn't like the fact that there was multiple events going on at one time. It's like, well, it's high school. Like, what did you expect? You know? So, you know, making sure that they, you know, they want to be in that setting, is huge, because you want someone that wants to be there. You know, like, I like working with the kids. I like getting to know the kids, and, you know, I pretty much have them for 4 years for the most part. So you get to gain a nice rapport with them. And there's some that you're like, God, when are you graduating? 'Cause but you know, if you have a candidate that doesn't want to be there, then like everything goes down the drain. The kids don't want to work with the athletic trainer, and the coaches don't either. You know, it's just a bad environment. So I think that's the biggest thing, is asking that why question.
I think that's really smart. Again, you can be really good at what you do, but if you're not working in that right demographic or environment, it's right. going to sour everything in the end.
Yeah.
Greg, what about you? I'm sorry.
You know, I thought about, you know, changing settings after I left Modern Day, but then I got to fill in for a football season. A friend of mine went on paternity leave, so I went back into it, you know, it was 10 weeks, and I'm like, you know what? I really like this setting. Like, I like working with the kids. And that was kind of like a good taste. 'Cause like I said, you can do industrial, but I'm like, I don't want to sit in an office. Like, I worked at FedEx for 10 years, but I had an active role there, you know? And I'm like, I can't imagine just sitting in an office in a warehouse. Like, no, like I would go crazy, you know? So that's why I like this setting. You know, working with the kids mostly.
Perfect.
I think a big takeaway for me when you were talking about that is wanting to know what setting they have experience in.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think you really hit the nail on the head when you were talking about you have multiple events. I mean, realistically, you are managing chaos on a given day with how many different events, how many moving parts, how many people are involved.
Mm-hmm.
And the setting piece really echoes with me, because I sit there and I think you could look at someone's resume, and let's just use college versus high school setting. You know, in college, you have one, insert whatever team, it's one women's basketball team, or it's, you know, there's one male crew team, there's one team, and you have one of each sport. In the high school setting, you're going to have multiple teams for every single one of those sports that you're going to have to manage and be able to provide not only just athletic trainer supervision, but also care, treatments, things like that. And being able to find the right individuals that can thrive in that environment, one, and then two, want to be in that environment. Because if you don't enjoy being around kids, and kids are going to be kids at times, and you're going to sit there and you're going to scratch your head and be like, what are they doing? But if you don't enjoy that element, you're not going to do well, no matter how great your clinical skill set is. You're going to really be impeded by that because you're not fit for that environment. That doesn't mean that you're not necessarily a great professional. It just might mean that that's not necessarily the environment that suits you best. And that's a big takeaway for me, is really kind of looking into the environments that they've been in and how does that translate? That doesn't mean you've had to be in high school your entire career, but you have to have some similarities and some passion for it. And I think that's a really big takeaway, and one that I personally, you know, if I was interviewing, would be something that I would ask in the future as well.
Yeah. Just because the profession has expanded so much in the recent years, like I said, so many different settings, you know, and you just get different viewpoints. There's, you know, like there's athletic trainers that love doing research, which that's great. Like, more power to you. That's not me. You know, I can't stand research. Let me know what you find out. And then I'll put it into practice. But I didn't like, no, I'm not a numbers person. You know, so you have someone that's been doing research for 10 years and they want to come to high school. That's a big, like, what, why? Like, why would you want to do that? You know, so, and it, you know, if they're like, hey, I want to change it up. And, you know, most kids coming out of college now, they get a lot of experience. So they get a little taste test of a lot of different avenues. So they can, you know, look at like orthopedic offices. You know, they get put in, some get put in with NFL teams. They get chiropractic office work. So they do like 6 week stints at, you know, various locations, which is great because I didn't have that. I got just thrown to the wolves. So they should have a good understanding, but again, it's, you know, 6 weeks say of work. It's like, how much experience do you have with that? Sometimes you luck out and you see a lot of injuries. Sometimes you don't see anything, to be honest. So
it's such an athletic trainer statement right there. Yeah. Greg. You luck out with injuries.
Yeah. And, I mean, to me, that's a great day at work, but not for the kid. but that's just my mindset. That's what I like. So
keeping a little bit on that theme in terms of just like the interview questions, right? Mm-hmm. What do you think are good measurables? What are some things that you would say you would like to see athletic trainers evaluated on?
One, like I said, communication. I would say being present, being, you know, not just like at the field watching the game, you know, but like not being on your phone scrolling Instagram or, you know, whatever. Just being alert, being aware. It's kind of hard because I've always wondered how ADs evaluate me, because I'm like, you're not sitting in my office every day. You see me sit on a golf cart, you know, to watch a soccer game, but like, you probably just think I'm just chilling on the golf cart, you know? When in reality I'm watching the game, you know, kid gets hurt, I can see what the mechanism of the injury is, you know? So, yeah, I would say, you know, visually just, you know, are they there? Are they out there? Are they on time? You know, the game starts at 3 and it's 3:30. Where are you? You know? So I think those are the biggest things that you could evaluate on. You know, everything else happens, like I said, behind closed doors. So unless you're micromanaging, which I, God forbid, I hope you're not. you know, it's hard to see, you know, like we're kind of like icebergs. You see like the tip of the iceberg, but what we do is really underneath the water, you know, behind closed doors. So I would say just punctuality, like, are you there every day? Like, are you calling in sick every day, you know, or are you available? You know, like, I know there's some people, when I first got hired, they're like, oh, you're here? I'm like, well, yeah, it's my job. But I guess other trainers just wouldn't show up. They had no idea when they were coming in or when they were leaving, or I'm like, well, that's not good. You know, so things like that. And I think just by me being present and doing my thing and being there every day, it takes a load off the ADs because they're not wondering like, crap, do we have a trainer today? You know, it's like, no, Christine's going to be here. Like I took a day off once and they're like, is everything okay? And I'm like, yes, totally fine. It's okay.
Believe it or not, she doesn't live there. You know,
it's right. I do go home.
No, and I think that's good takeaways too, because there's, I really like how you said you're like an iceberg, mm-hmm. because you only see the tip of what's going on. And there's so much below the surface that's taking place. Athletic directors are not going to, for the most part, I don't want to speak for every single one of them, they're not going to have the clinical background to understand what you're doing for certain treatment modalities to be able to help and get a student athlete back to their respective field of play, while also at the same time mitigating risks for them, the conversations you're having with parents. I would think, like, from an AD perspective, and I certainly want to get Scott's thoughts as well, is one, obviously there's going to be the presence factor. And then two, there's going to be talking with the ATC's peers, the coaches, you know, getting feedback from how are they interacting with the given athletic teams. And I know this is going to be very anecdotal, but there was a lot of times where I would just hear kids talking and singing praises of ATCs, right? And being like, oh man, yeah, that was great. They went in the treatment. I feel so much better. I'm ready to go. And it's little snippets like that where you're like, okay, I know that they're doing what they need to do. They're connecting with the kids. The kids have faith in them. The coaches have faith in them. I by no means have the medical background to understand what they're doing, but I know that we're operating in the right realm because the feedback that I'm seeing. What are your thoughts on that, Scott?
Yeah, I mean, listen, you've been there, right? I was an assistant principal. I was observing like Spanish classes, couldn't speak a word of Spanish. You're in like physics, and I think about soda and fizz when I think about physics. So like the point though is that you can tell pretty quickly if a teacher, if a trainer, one, has that relationship with the kids, right? Like you don't need to know the content to be able to figure that out. You can judge by the reaction. You can judge by the relationship. You can judge by the light bulb going on in the kid's head. And like, I feel the same way about trainers. And I think what you said, Greg, is so right on. Like, you know, you hear, you listen. I think I would always go with like the four C's. And let's talk about observations in general. One is for my athletic director colleagues out there, you may be given a observation tool that is like the school teacher observation tool, and you're asked to figure out how to make that work for an athletic trainer. And I would say that's something to fight right from the start. Think about, again, you don't have to create your own, you can get others, but I think that that job is so different than others that they deserve their own evaluation tool and not trying to fit like that, you know, round circle, square peg, like kind of thing. And so I would go out there and see if you can get something else approved that makes sense when you're observing a trainer. For me, I would look at things like, I say the four C's, like calm, caring, competent, communicative. Like I would break it down to kind of like those four things. There's nothing like, you know, somebody who's calm in the face of a terrible injury and being able to keep that whole situation, you know, under wraps and calm. Like those are the things that stick out to me. But if you're sitting there trying to figure out how to fit that into what happens in a classroom observation setting, like it doesn't necessarily work. So ADs, go out there and find an evaluation tool that fits for that type of position.
No, I 100% agree. I mean, I think those are great. I was going to bring that up is, you know, how does the AT perform under pressure in emergency situation? For example, I had a soccer kid break his collarbone. To me, that's like, okay, like, cool.
An AT statement right there. Love it.
You know, kids crying and whatnot. I'm calm, collected, and, you know, just doing my thing and get the kid to calm down. But to my right, and this was probably, I'd probably been at Fountain Valley for, you know, a few weeks at this point. So I didn't know everybody. I didn't know all the APs. And there was one there on the field and he was like freaking out, you know, and I'm just like, it's cool. Like, it's just a collarbone. Like, well, we'll go get an x-ray. And he's like, how are you so calm? I'm like, well, it's my job, you know, but then in future instances, he's there. He's like, if I see that Christine's calm, then I know it's going to be fine, you know? So that's a good example. You know, it's, you know, there are some people that don't handle pressure well. They freeze under pressure and it's kind of like, you're the one, the AT is the one that's supposed to be doing certain things at a certain point, you know, you shouldn't have to be like, you know, questioning that they're like hesitating, so to speak. That's a red flag right there. You know, that's what we're trained in is emergency medicine. Yes, having that calm factor is huge. And it just makes the whole environment around the athlete calmer. It calms parents down. It calms coaches down. It goes a long ways.
You know, and I think that I saw this firsthand, you know, because Christine and I had worked together for many years. And I remember there was a football game where we had a wide receiver. And he went down and there was near our sideline. And I just saw Christine calmly walk over and kind of lay him back down because he was trying to sit up. And she just placed a hand on him and was like, okay, just lay back down and put a towel over simultaneously because it was a bad break. But she knew that overall everything would be okay, you know, but she didn't want the athlete to go into shock. She didn't want coaches and spectators to freak out and calm, cool, and collected. And then it was, we get the student athlete the care they need, but that demeanor really set the tone for the entire environment, right? You don't have everybody on the sideline freaking out, oh no, what's going on? That calm, cool, collected demeanor really goes a long way. And that was a point in my career where I'm looking at it, I'm like, yeah, that's why they do what they do, because I might need a bucket looking at what you just looked at. So,
well, that game, I remember that vividly. That game was also on TV.
Yes, it was.
And the cameras were right on our sideline. So I knew, like, the foot's pointing 90 degrees in the wrong direction. Like, I like that stuff. Like I said before, I like it, you know. I can't tell you how many parents came up to me after that, Greg, that were like, oh my God, thank you for the towel. Because I guess the network kept trying to do the replay. And so the parents kept having to look at it, and they're like, oh my God, thank God you put the towel over it. I'm like, yeah, no problem.
Definitely check that calm box on that evaluation, Scott. That's for sure.
There you go. It's huge. It really is. Yeah. Christine, another thing that I always leaned on, well, coaches and trainers, but it's like budgetary stuff, right? Like, mm-hmm. We had to figure out a budget. We had to do the ordering, and there's a lot that goes into that ordering and budget for an athletic training office. So what would you tell an athletic director in terms of what their role versus what your role should be in that budgeting and ordering process? And are there any things that you would say are like non-negotiables? We need this every year, and you cannot touch my budget for things like this.
Well, I would say most every athletic training student, both at the high school and college level, do a dream training room project. You know, where you're given, say, $25,000, you get to build your own training room and, you know, kind of pick what you want. In my career, I've basically asked, you know, how much money do I have to spend? You know, and either like the AD will be like, oh, you've got $10,000. And I confirm, is that for the year? Is it for a semester? You know, or, you know, say it's 10 grand for the year, then basically I go shopping. Cause like we said before, like, you guys don't know what we use. There's every athletic trainer is different. We have different likes of, you know, I like this kind of tape. I like this kind of tape. If you guys looked at our catalog, you wouldn't know where to start. You know, yes, there's some luxury items. But throughout my career, I've learned, hey, this works best for me. You know, it has a multi-purpose use. You know, and then you kind of decide how much of it you're going to use. I'd say like the non-negotiables is your basic tape and first aid supplies. All your like big ticket items to me are luxury items, you know, like your Normatec compression boots, things like that. Yeah, it's great to have, you know, but can you use that $1,000 somewhere else? You know, I would say for ADs, if someone wants a big ticket item, have them explain why, you know, why do you need this? I knew someone that bought one of those, the big sideline tents that you see in the NFL now. I'm like, it's high school, you know, and yes, there's cameras everywhere on cell phones and stuff, but I don't want to be, you know, as a female, I don't want to be under that tent with a male football player, you know, and that's then, you know, then have some speculation come up later. Like, no, and there's not enough personnel. We don't have a medical team that could go in there and have my back, you know? So it's like, no, I'm not going to put myself in that legal position. And there's no reason to spend $5,000 on a stupid tent, you know, but some people do. So, yeah, like I said, I usually just ask how much money I have and then try and buy as much useful stuff with that. And if I need to plan it out, you know, like, hey, I need to make this 10 grand last a whole year, then you kind of strategize, you leave a little bit of money left over in case for, you know, you're like, oh crap, I went through too much tape during football. I need to like replenish that supply for spring. You know, so, and it should be pretty basic for any athletic trainer. You know, but if there's a lot of, you know, I'd say like weird items, I would question it. Just ask why. I mean, someone before me, I've got 70,000 Band-Aids in my office right now because someone went crazy and bought cases of Band-Aids. I'm like, who does this? You know?
They were on sale.
I've given them out as Christmas gifts.
There you go. Yeah. I mean, the only thing I would say to like athletic directors is be reasonable. Understand that these things cost a lot of money. And probably I would say like hold back some of that money because you may need to add to that later. It's really hard to plan for, you know, certain seasons and certain types of things that you may go through. So hold back a little bit of that cash, making sure you have enough for that spring season. So those athletes have the same exact stuff that the fall athletes had. Greg, anything from the perspective?
I mean, it comes with experience of knowing, you know, like, hey, I do a lot more wrist taping and thumb taping in football, you know, with linemen, you know, that type of tape tapers off throughout the year, you know. The more so prehab that you do, like to strengthen ankles, the less ankle taping you're going to have to do, which can coincide with working with a strength and conditioning coach, you know. So, you know, things like that, just, you know, like I said, with experience, you learn, you know, what seasons require what. You set rules as well. You know, like some kids like to spat their cleats in football. And I said, that's great. Bring your own tape. You know, like to me, it's a waste of tape. So I'm not going to waste my product on making your shoes look cool. You know, if you want that, I'll do it, but bring your own tape, you know? So, and the kids are like totally fine with it, you know? So, not doing, a lot of taping just for looks, for drip, as they say, you know, it's like, bring your own, you know, like they all like the turf tape on their elbows. Like, that's great. It helps, but I'm not going to spend my money on that.
BYOT, Greg.
Yeah.
Yep. And, exactly. And, exactly.
Yeah. Cause I mean, that adds up, you know, you've got 60 guys, like, you know, I can spend that money on a lot of other cool stuff.
How much tape did you have to use on Greg after he got done using the fitness center? That's what I want to know. Or before.
Well, I will say this. Christine, you would have killed me when I was a college football player. And I still remember Dale Mildenberg was our athletic trainer when I was a player. And he caught me in the locker room during camp. And to pass the time between practices, I began making a tape ball. That grew to be quite impressive. And one day after practice, he sees me adding to it. And he looks at me and goes, where did you get that tape? And I go, I just found it. And looking back now, speaking with you, having worked in the athletic director realm as well, I owe Dale a call and an apology for the amount of money that I wasted of his tape. And I think another thing, too, that kind of resonates both for the ATCs and the athletic director is, you know, you've got to keep inventory. Keep track of what you've done years prior. That gives you a good baseline of what you're looking at. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, much like Scott and I have said on other budgetary discussions that we've had, when you have those big ticket items, you got to be able to communicate it. You have to make sure that you're explaining the value, not only to just the athletic director, but also probably recruiting some of your coaches that may have to help contribute to this, mm-hmm. and being able to have just an in-depth conversation about it. So certainly great talking points.
Yeah.
So I'm going to put you on the spot.
Okay.
What was one of your most memorable or crazy experiences as an athletic trainer?
It'd probably be in like when I first started, I was at Estancia High School in Costa Mesa. You know, they say the saying of like everything happens in threes. Well, that happened to me. I had lower level football game. It was a Thursday. And just before, I had all my equipment out on the field already. I'd gone in to like use a restroom or something, and I have this kid come in, this like hysterical, and I'm like, "What's going on?" He's like, "My friend just had a seizure in the parking lot." I'm like, "Oh, okay." The parking lot's closed. I'm like, I go out there again, no equipment. Turns out, kid did have a seizure, but when he fell, he hit his head on the hitch receiver of the truck, and then he's then he fell halfway underneath the truck. So he's got a like nice L-shaped gash in his head, bleeding profusely. So I dive under the truck, put pressure on, no gloves, it's fine. Have the kids call 911. Thankfully, the fire department's across the street, but I had nothing. And so I, you know, talk with the fire department, like help this kid out. And it wasn't even a, wasn't even an athlete. It was just a normal student. So I don't have any information on this kid. So then dealing with the fire department, I have to be like decontaminated, as they say. I think I missed probably like the first quarter or something of the game. go out to the game. I'm like, okay, like switch minds, you know, switch gears. Now I'm on football, you know? And so then at halftime of the football game, I see a former athlete of mine go over and say hi. He has a dog. I'm like, oh, your dog's so cute. I put my hand down so the dog can smell it, and he licks it and then proceeds to bite it.
Oh no.
So fingers crushed, like blood everywhere. I'm like, what the, like, yeah, so crushed my finger, and so I, you know, wrap it up myself, and the AD's like, you should go home. I'm like, we got a football game going on here. Like, I can't go home. So then that goes on, like, right as the game ends, I get called to tennis, have a kid pass out on the tennis courts, and I'm just like, what else is going to happen today? What?
Now, there's the one sport that you're like, you're figuring you're not going to get a lot of calls, right, for the tennis, unless they hit themselves in the head with the racket. I've seen those kids split a head open doing that. But, like, that's a rough day when you think you got to go deal with the tennis passing out, too.
So then I have to go to urgent care, you know, get stitches on my finger. Me and the doctor are taking bets on if it's broken or not. I'm like, it's broken. I heard and felt the crunch, you know, the tip was crushed. So, and yeah, it was like, but then Friday night football the next day, I have to tape with 9 fingers and it's my dominant hand, you know, like that, and it hurts like hell. So yeah, that was fun. So
for those that are tuning in and wondering what a crazy day in an athletic trainer's life is like, that is a quick synopsis of how many things can go wrong in a given couple hour period for ATCs. And that also echoes to the level of chaos you have to be comfortable in dealing with on a day-to-day from that perspective of the job. Yeah. That's insane.
Yeah. So, I think probably the hardest part of that was, like I said, learning to tape with 9 fingers.
You were calm when you had your own injury and you were taping yourself up. I'm sure you were nice and calm, right?
Well, I was pissed, to be honest. and so I was like, it was like just hanging down. It was bleeding. And I'm like, oh, people probably don't want to look at this. I should probably clean it up.
Get the towel.
That's right.
Get the towel.
Yeah.
That's great.
But I was just like, oh my God. Just like,
well, I think I would finish up this by number one, saying thank you for joining us. Number two, I think it is Athletic Trainer Appreciation Month, and say to all athletic directors who might be listening, show some love for your athletic trainers. You can do that on a daily basis with the way you communicate, with the way you schedule. But here in March, maybe find something a little extra, right? Is there a little extra gear you can get them? Find a way, if it's a coffee, find a way to just show a little extra appreciation here.
Absolutely.
During this month, it goes a long way. And Christine, again, thank you so much. It's great to meet you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, and then one last question I'll ask is, what piece of advice would you give aspiring athletic trainers, you know, that are wanting to get into this field? If you could leave the listeners on that note of just what would you tell a younger version of you or somebody that's looking to get into this field?
I would say be a sponge. Just learn from, you know, experienced people. Go out and experience things for yourself, like work a bunch of different events. There's a lot you learn on the job that is not in a textbook. I mean, I've had to learn how to deal with teenagers. and how honestly stupid they can be sometimes. There's injuries that you see that are instances that you're like, how you can't write this. You can't make this stuff up. I mean, I had a kid that didn't know how zip ties work, but decided to put it around their arm and keep pulling, you know? So it's like, nothing prepared me for that one, you know? But again, like, you got to stay calm and laugh later, I guess. I've had to teach kids how to open up a plastic bag for ice. The things that I'm like, you're 15 years old. You should know how to do this. Again, no one told me how dumb kids were going to be. Like, I wasn't that stupid, you know? So, experience. You could be as smart and know everything in your anatomy book, but it's how you handle situations, that sets you apart, like we talked about.
No, I think those are great advice points to give. Mm-hmm. And I also appreciate you saying there was a 15-year-old kid, not me, that needed help with the ice bag. So appreciate that one, Christine. Yeah. That's a big shout out to you.
Think of, I know you're done hearing from me today, but it did make me think, we don't need to answer to it, but for people to, and ATCs to consider too, which is like, what is that? You have freshmen coming into high school who mm-hmm. don't even know what an athletic trainer is.
Yeah.
So right. How are you getting them adapted to understanding the role, what they have access to, because they probably never had that before. Mm-hmm. Again, something to think about as for freshman teams and freshmen coming in, some sort of way to introduce them to.
Yeah, the our freshman available. Coach literally brings in his team and introduces me and says, this is the training room. And then I go and explain what we do here and, you know, the rules I have. And, you know, like, I don't let them use me as an excuse for being late to practice. You know, I'm like, no, like, I'll ask, what time is practice? 2:30. I'll have you out by 2:30, you know? So explaining my rules and my role, and what they can expect. You'll always have your timid kids that, you know, like, they're afraid that I'm going to keep them out of the sport. But you know, I reassure them, like, that's not what I'm here for. Like, I don't want you in my office. I want you on that field, you know? So just explaining that to them, you know, the beginning of summer or whatever, it helps a lot.
Well, Christine, thank you so much for joining us today. It's always a pleasure catching up with you. And athletic directors, as Scott mentioned, it is Athletic Training Appreciation Month. Show the appreciation to those folks that are going out there and taking care of your student athletes and ensuring that they, number one, have safety, but then two, are also assisting them in times when they need assistance and need and care. They are the unsung heroes of athletic departments, and I know that both as a coach as well as an athletic director. So a huge thank you to all ATCs out there. But Christine, really a big thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Greg. I appreciate it.
All right, folks. Well, if you liked what you heard today, stay tuned for future episodes and make sure you follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from so you don't miss new episodes. From AD360, I'm Greg Vandermeid.
Scott Rosenberg.
Until next time, folks.